Welcome to the Sex Talk Cafe, where the mission is to normalize the conversation on sexuality while providing you with a real education on sex, intimacy, and relationships. You know, the one you never got in school, from your parents, friends, or the internet. I'm your host, Susan Morgan Taylor. As a sex therapist for couples, I've empowered thousands of couples around the world to get back on the same page in intimacy using my proprietary Pleasure Keys process. Find out more about that at pleasurekeys.com. Join me here at the Sex Talk Cafe for juicy and provocative conversations with the experts. Let's get down to it. Welcome to the Sex Talk Cafe. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Sex Talk Cafe. My guest today, I am so very excited to introduce. Today, we have Court Vox, who is a somatic sex and intimacy coach, a surrogate partner, and the founder of The Body Vox. Through his courses, workshops, retreats, and private immersions, he helps clients overcome limitations and shame, fostering deeper intimacy and connection with their whole selves. Vox's expertise draws from disciplines including somatics, sexological bodywork, tantra, BDSM, and shadow work. As a sex educator, Vox has worked with clients of all sexualities and genders. His work has been featured in Ask Men, The New York Times, and Well and Good. Vox, welcome to the Sex Talk Cafe. I'm so excited to have you today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Good to be up bright and early.
Woohoo, bright and early. Yes. Well, and so that was a bit of a shortened bio. I know you have so much expertise and experience with what you bring to this amazing body of work, somatic sexology. And I would love just to give you an opportunity maybe to touch on anything that I didn't share in your bio or anything about your story and how you got into this line of work that our listeners might love to hear.
Yeah, I think, I'll give you kind of my spiel a little bit. So I am a somatic sex and intimacy coach, and unlike traditional therapy, talk therapy, I work with the body. I work with body-based exercises, experiential learning, as well as touch. And we also do quite a bit of processing and talking. So it's not like we never speak, yeah. But we have experiences and then we talk about them and kind of better understand, you know, why they're resonating or why they're not. You know, I got into this work. This is my, I started my business in October of 2019. I had been kind of dabbling in it. You know what? Let me rephrase. I had been preparing to make a transition from corporate into this work for about 2 years. Wow. And that year, 2019, was me really kind of like stepping in, having practice people to work with. And then in 2019, I decided to leave that job. And I remember saying to myself, you know what, I'm just going to jump off this mountain. And I'm okay if I'm going to be poor. But this is what I'm going to be doing with my life. And I'm not going back to corporate. And so here we go, universe. And right. I feel like I did jump off that mountain and the universe caught me in a really big way because I started and I haven't stopped since. I've been pretty busy. So
yeah, wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, but big change from the corporate world into somatic sexology.
Yeah. You know what? The work itself is very different, obviously. But the behind the scenes work, my work in corporate and social media and influencer marketing and marketing has really helped me in my back end, you know, just with my business, because really the business of this is about 50%. Mm-hmm. The work is, you know, it's fun and light and easy and I enjoy it. And the office work is like, okay, I'm doing office work.
Gotta do that too. Gotta work on the business and in the business. Well, let's talk about somatics because I also am a somatic sex therapist, and a lot of times people don't understand what the word somatic means. And I would love for you to share with our listeners. And I know you talked about it a little bit in terms of it involves experiences and involves the body and sometimes involves touch. But I wonder if you can go into more detail in that and help our listeners understand really what is different about this approach versus maybe a more traditional talk therapy approach?
Yeah. I also want to say that there are differentiations in the somatics world, right?
Yes. So I was going to get to that.
Yeah.
Well. Yeah.
Okay.
It's
okay.
Important to distinguish that. Yes. Well. Let's get to that next because I want to.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So somatic means of the body. You know, again, it's not just the corporal body. So It's the spirit of the body. It's the connective tissue. It's the body as a holistic approach to the body. And so, you know, traditional therapy, as good as it is, I also have a traditional therapist and I love them. And they also are somatic and, you know, have done, you know, tantra retreats and things like that. So they really understand me and the work that I do, which is wonderful. But, you know, what I find with traditional therapy is it's very much like from the neck up. And if you're lucky, from the heart center up, right? Yeah. And what happens is we kind of forget that we have a rest of a body, and specifically the genitals, right? Yes. And that's kind of where my work is different, in that I'm really incorporating the entire body, and understanding that it's all connected,
yeah,
right? All these things are connected. And when we can connect our genitals to our heart and our mind and our spirit, it's just, it's such a rich experience. And so many of us have grown up with religion. We've grown up really like in head spaces to think about sex or to think about our bodies from a very mental perspective, but we haven't really like been feeling.
Yeah.
And so that it is a practice of integrating feeling, sensation. Mm. What are you noticing in your body? You know, it could be as simple as vibration or tingling to start. And sometimes people are like, I don't feel anything, or I feel numbness. And it's like, that's also a sensation. That's okay. We'll start there.
Yeah.
You know, so it's sort of like meeting people where they are. But it is like an incorporation of all our parts.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And I love that description and that distinction, because I have a background myself in mental health. And one of the things that I think is the real limit, mental health is wonderful, like you said, there, and there's so many good therapists out there, but really where I think it's very limited, it tends to be very neutered. Like there's really this fear, even in the sex therapy, you know, licensed sex therapists, my experiences are, there's still a real fear of actually encountering the genitals or encountering the sexual energy in the therapy room. It's very cut off. And like you said, you're lucky if the heart is there with the mind, but a lot of times we're not going below the waist, even just sensationally, you know, obviously staying fully clothed. And there's a lot more limitations I think we have in the mental health realm around sexuality, but it's very disconnected from my experience and journey there, to the extent that I'm a huge believer in the somatic approach. I practice it myself. I've incorporated it into my work. And so what you're speaking to is really a much more integrated way of addressing our, just not just sex, but our whole entire being, because sex is part of who we are. It's part of our humanness. And if we're not inviting that, then we're not, we're cutting off access to a part of our, who we are as humans and our life.
Yeah. And I actually want to use the word sex in broad strokes, because you know, for some people, their sexuality is just based on solo sex, and that's wonderful. And, you know, how can you expand your solo sex to kind of be more about you and your body and your connection with your body? You know, so many of us are having solo sex specifically with porn.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not even going to badmouth porn. Like, that has and serves a purpose. And it's also like people are coming to me for different approaches, different ways to connect with themselves and others. And sometimes it means titrating our relationship with porn, with even sometimes with our own hands, right? If we're wanting to connect more with other people, it's not to say like, get rid of it. I'm not saying throw baby out with the bathwater, but like, let's take a look at that relationship and understand what's working, what's not, and also how we might titrate it in a way that's like, you know, we're going to use it differently.
Yeah. Yes. Having an actual different approach, for example, and let's hear from you on that, because I'm a big believer in that as well. Like a lot of times it's sort of like changing, for example, how one might masturbate or self-pleasure, like the actual approach to it, or how one might still have a relationship with porn, but use it slightly differently. And can you just give an example of what that, how might that look in your work?
Yeah. So, you know, even like for somebody, you know, if porn is a big part of your personal practice, try finding something that has audio and then putting the visual down and just, you know, starting to activate your own imagination, your own visuals, and reconnect with the sensations in your body. So that's one.
Oh, I love that.
And another one would be to just put the whole thing down for a second and kind of breathe and notice what's happening in your body. Because what happens when we're watching porn is we're like putting so much focus on what we're watching that we forget what we're feeling.
Yes.
And so much focus is going to the genitals, but we've got a whole body. And so noticing what's happening in your chest and your throat and your face and your feet and kind of integrating all of that pleasure throughout your body and then going back to it if you need to, or what if you just use it as a starting point to get you going? Excuse me. So it's not throwing out, but kind of finding ways to be in different relationship to it.
Sure. And what are the benefits of, like, as I'm hearing you speak, how I might describe this, it's like sort of expanding your range or your ability to access sensation or access ways of experiencing pleasure. However, what I find a lot of times people who are trying to do that, like you said, like a lot of times there's like, well, I don't feel much because there's been so much emphasis just say on the genitals, for example, or that one pathway to reaching climax, that when someone really slows down and starts to try to bring awareness to other parts of the body, they might not be able to feel very much. Do you find that to be true? And do you find that there's sort of resistance to that because that tends to be the case?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a couple things. You know, sensation play is something that I utilize a lot in my work. You know, anything from like scratchy things to soft fur and feathers, all the way up to paddles and impact play, you know, with paddles and floggers and things like that. And even rope, sensations of rope and things like that. And what I find is that our sensations are just bombarded on a daily basis.
Yeah.
You know, with everything, you know, marketing, and we've got loud streets and we're in offices and we're with kids and just, it's a lot. And then we get into the bedroom and we think that this is going to be enough. And we're like, I can't even feel that. Right. So I think for a lot of people, their bodies can take and want and desire much, I'm going to say stronger, but more intentional touch.
Sure.
So, you know, for somebody who has a really energetic body, you know, just talking about touching them could be enough. You know, I could talk about touching their nipples or their ear, and the thought of it, the resonance of being close is enough to send them into shivers. You know, and then other people really need, you know, more impact, maybe like pressure points or, you know, weight of somebody's body on top of you. Or so it is an exploration, and a lot of times people just don't know what they don't know. And so if you kind of lay down with yourself in your own hands, I would say think about the different types of sensation, whether it's pressure, it's soft touch, you know, impact using your hands, and like play with it and just kind of go, oh, that's interesting, right? It's all an experiment. And sure. I like to say that practice makes practice. And, you know, we're not practicing to go to the Olympics. We're practicing to have, you know, more fulfilled, more rich sexual experiences. And so, you know, do it for that.
I love that. Let's change gears here for just a minute before we continue on. I'm loving this conversation. I do want to talk about under the umbrella of somatic, there are different threads of this. And would love to hear in your own words, what are some of the different avenues that somatic, and I'm just going to, like, I use the word somatic sexology sort of as that umbrella term, because there's somatic sex therapists, there's sexological body workers, there's somatic sex educators, and there's sort of a slightly different educational path, but also a different approach to how those titles under that somatic umbrella would approach a client session. And I'm wondering if you could just give a distinction for our listeners of what is the difference. And then you have surrogate as well, which I would love to talk about that. So we really need to make a distinction there with that piece as well. But that's an amazing line of work, and I want to get into that. But maybe first we could start with just what are the different distinctions under the umbrella of somatic sexology?
Yeah. So, you know, when There's different certifying bodies, and so like there's Somatica, there's Somatic Sex Education, which you know is involved with sexological body work, but the SSEA has really expanded their curriculum to include more of somatics with sexological body work, which is more touch based, and so it's expanded into something a little bit bigger than it used to be. And then you have the work of like Peter Levine, which is you know somatics and. I think, you know, sometimes a somatic therapist might never touch their clients.
Right.
And if we could just speak about what touch is for a second.
Yeah, let's talk about what touch is.
Because touch doesn't always mean me putting my hands on you.
Mm. Oh, wow. Yeah. This is a radical idea. And I can't wait to hear more about this.
So I'll tell a little story. I did a psychedelic mushroom journey with a therapist, and when we were preparing, they asked me, they said, are you okay with me touching you throughout the journey? And I said, well, let's talk about that. I'm okay with you like putting nurturing hands in my body if you feel like called to. And they were like, well, do you want me to check in with you? And I said, no, just use your intuition. I will let you know. I have a pretty strong voice. If something's bothering me, I'll just be like, I don't like that.
Yeah.
I was like, you know, I don't want genital touch. I'm actually okay with you touching. We whole boundaries, right?
Yeah.
And then they said, what about sound? Are you okay with me touching you with sound? And I said, sound? How would you touch me with sound? And they said, well, is that something that you want? And I said, yeah, I want sound. And then when I was in the journey, I really understood how he was touching me with sound, right? There would be a bell that would go off, and my attention would go to the bell. Or he would read me a poem or read me a story, and I would become 6 years old. And so the touch, he wasn't actually near me with his hands, but he was touching me. Mm. And so I think, you know, it's possible to have that discussion of, you know, are you okay with me touching you with sound? Are you okay with me touching you through meditation, as maybe even through like fantasy or... Right? Of like, imagine me touching your throat chakra right now. Notice what it feels like to have my hand there.
Oh,
like,
wow.
The power of suggestion, the power of imagination is really huge. Yeah. And as we're, fantasy is a really big part of my work as well, of inviting people to imagine what's possible. Even if it's not ever going to happen, to be able to speak the desire out loud and explore it in a way that feels comforting and rich and exciting without having to put yourself in, you know, a situation that might not be safe or comfortable, right? You know, and for some of those people, it's a pathway to actualize it, right? As we're feeling the sensations in our body of as we're recounting it or imagining it, of what could be possible, you know, a year from now or 2 years from now, you know, having couples talk about this, but really from a sensation place of like feeling as if you're there.
Sure.
Kind of preparing for the day that you actually, you know, manifest it together. Mm-hmm. And this could be with anything, not just sex, right? Mm-hmm. But I want to go back to your question. I think the difference between what I do and like a somatic therapist, for example, is that I do offer touch, that genital touch can be a part of our program, you know, genital de-armoring, sensation mapping, genital mapping, internal anal mapping. These are part of somatic sex education, which is very specific to that modality. I'd also say that the governing bodies have different ethics attached. You know, I know, for example, with somatic sex education, like intimacy is an interesting dance in that community. So kissing is not on the table. But like Somatica, for example, Somatica offers kissing, but with clothes on. So everybody kind of has their own rules and ethics and things to abide by, just based on their own experience and what they want their community to follow.
Sure. And I would even go so far as to say, even if you have trained in some of those schools, it would still be up to you as the practitioner in terms of what type of, are you offering two-way touch, mutual touch, or is it one-way touch? I know somatic sex education in general tends to be one-way touch from practitioner to client, whereas surrogate work, I only know one other.
It is, yeah.
Surrogate is mutual. It's back and forth. It's a real relationship. And I think that there's a misunderstanding, I believe, with those who are not as familiar with the somatic realm. Even as a sex therapist, people sometimes think, like, do you have sex with your clients? So there's a real difference between some of these, you know, somatic sex education, sexological body workers, somatic sex therapists versus a surrogate, where potentially, now I know that that's not necessarily the main focus of a sex surrogate. However, that could be a part of the experience if it's, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but if it's therapeutic for the client, that could be part of the experience if it's kind of part of their treatment with a surrogate. And can you speak more to sexual surrogacy, what that is, and specifically how is it different from some of the other things we're talking about?
Yeah, so surrogacy can involve two-way touch and mostly does. You know, the client is usually different in surrogacy. So the client is oftentimes working through a great deal of trauma, either sexual trauma or physical trauma, something that has really like thwarted or stopped their relationship with their body and their sexuality. And so a lot of those clients either are latent virgins, they've never had sex. And so we're talking about 30, 40, 50, 60-year-olds that have never been in erotic connection with someone. Or something has happened, there's been a break, and it's been 7 years, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years since there has been any kind of sexual connection or even desire for it. And there becomes this kind of tipping point where it's like, okay, I'm getting older. Or, you know, I'm maturing and I would like to have some kind of a relationship. And this piece is so scary to jump into with a person that is maybe not going to be understanding. I'm just going to say normie, a normal person. Okay. Who's not going to be equipped to handle my anxiety around this, to handle my trauma around this. And when I say handle my trauma, I mean to really be patient with the real effects that it has on the physical body.
Yeah.
Right? You know, we think about trauma as like the experience itself. But from a somatic perspective, trauma is actually the held and lived experience in the body.
Right.
And so like when I would go to touch someone, it might be a recoiling.
Yeah.
And so a lot of that process is rewiring their nervous system to understand that touch and kind of erotic attention, whether it's hands or mouth or even energetic, is not harmful, that it actually has the potential for pleasure and nurturing, right? And that takes time. And so the thing that kind of irks me a little bit about the outside world looking in at surrogacy is the question is always like, do you have sex with them?
Yeah, right.
You know, and it's sort of like, it kind of debases the work itself because so much time and energy goes into being so patient and thoughtful and allowing people to open on their own.
Sure.
And sometimes it could take, you know, weeks or months before, you know, hours, depending on the person, before we even like take our shirts off.
Yeah.
You know, so it is about meeting the client where they are. And if I never am not like, it's time to take our shirts off. It's like, I'm not ready to do that. Okay. You know, it's more of like an invitation. What feels good for you today? Like, here's some of the things I'm thinking about that might further your exploration and your current iteration of where you are.
Wow.
What feels good for you? You know, so giving a menu of options, and this is in all of my work, you know, something so beautiful about somatic sex education is voice and choice. Being able to have agency to make your own choices and to know, you know, to like really feel into the choice and have agency and autonomy over the things that you're asking for and to be able to ask for it. And then also the voice piece of like, really like, you know, so many of us have a hard time expressing.
Sure.
You know, not just expressing what we want, but expressing in the moment of using sound and using our breath and using, you know, getting a little weird. Like, no, really, like, what does your pleasure sound like? It might be weird at first. if we're not emulating porn sounds, mm-hmm. like, what does your authentic sound like?
That's so juicy and beautiful. And I think that, you know, what you're speaking to really in surrogate work and somatic sexological body work, somatic sex education, is something that's so often not afforded to us in just sort of our day-to-day intimate relationships, mm-hmm. and even a lot of other even therapeutic relationships, which is this idea of giving, taking time, like slowing down, giving the client all the time in the world, the space to be able to feel into what do I feel right now? I don't know. Because that, even that question alone, what are you noticing in your body? What are you feeling? It can be like deer in the headlights, right? Much mm-hmm. less what do you want, which is a whole right. next level thing. So there's such a gift, I think, in the experience of being able to have this spaciousness and have this time to allow the body to speak. And that just takes, like you said, a lot of attentiveness, a lot of slowing down, a space of acceptance where there's no pressure for anything in particular to have to happen, and where the client mm-hmm. is really able to be honored in that way. And I think that's just such the beauty of what you're, it's so not an understood thing. And it's almost a foreign concept. We think we have to come up with something right away. Like, well, what would you like? What kind of touch do you want? Oh my God, I have to think of what I want really fast because I'm supposed to want something, versus if you just could slow down and don't even speak until it's a genuine sensation or feeling arising from your body, which is different than if we're thinking about something that I liked last time. Let's try that, right? Can you speak to the difference? Because that's really the distinction, I think, between, you know, the somatic, the feeling, the body-based approach versus a mind-based approach. Mm-hmm. Can you speak to that a little bit, and how that shows up in your work and in your work with clients?
Yeah, what's interesting is like a traditional approach of somatic sex education or sexological body work is sort of like, okay, I'm going to wait until you know exactly what you want and ask for it before I touch you. Mm-hmm. And so the therapist or the practitioner would just sort of wait.
Yeah.
And the client would be kind of stewing in what it is, like feeling, probably thinking a lot.
Sure.
I think that approach is a little aggressive.
Ah, wow.
I think it's more appropriate and activating to give people choices, because when we don't have lexicon and we don't have reference point, we don't know what to ask for. And oftentimes, when even in a container, a new container, they might go, well, I want that, but I don't know if that's available or if that's allowed. And so really like expressing what the menu is, what the options could be, allows people a new language to speak from.
I love it.
And so if you say, what kind of sensations do you like? You're like, I don't know. What are sensations?
Yeah.
What are the sensations? I don't know.
What's the options?
Right. So if I'm like, let's explore some sensations. This is what scratchies feel like. This is what soft things feel like. This is what, you know, enhance, like smell. Can we bring some taste into the room? You know, then it's like, okay, now we have a shared language that we can go from, you know, and this is also something for couples to consider, right? That, you know, what I spoke to earlier about people needing more in terms of deeper sensation or more intentional sensation, I think couples get into, you know, in my experience with couples, it's that usually they need more than the other one is giving. And there is sort of this fear of, ooh, I'm going to hurt them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And every single time their partner's like, you're not hurting me. This is actually kind of annoying. So yeah, the piece of like, sometimes we think we know our partner and we also think we know ourselves, but when we don't know what we don't know, we don't know what's possible beyond our current education or our current knowing, it's hard to say you know, what we want beyond what we already know. If that makes sense.
No, it absolutely does. And I love that because I think you're giving like a certain amount of containment to the experience. I think that is a needed ingredient, especially if someone's very new to, like you said, like what is even a sensation? I mean, if we're working with that, with the body, which is sensation based, feeling based, but someone's very new to it or they're very disconnected from the body, that is almost like it like the description, it's like a really aggressive approach. I had never thought of it that way. Like I've always thought, oh, that's so, it feels very gentle and very kind, but I can see how that could be very harsh to someone who doesn't have we need some sort of reference point, a starting point. And I could see how over time, as somebody becomes better versed in the language and you have the shared language with your practitioner, that over time, your vocabulary can expand. Now you have reference points and from there it can just grow and deepen.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Let's talk about, you know, in a session, I know there's probably some listeners here that are like freaking out right now at the thought of, oh my gosh, like touch and genital touch and what is this? And speak to how you create boundaries and safety and the role of consent in somatic work.
Yeah. So, you know, I work in three day containers. So I work in immersion and, you know, what's possible in immersion is expansion and contraction in a closed container. So, you know, I tried in the beginning to work with clients in like, you know, 1 hour increments, you know, this week and then next week, but people would like reschedule and it just didn't have a cohesive feeling to it. And when I switched to doing 3 days, it was such a rich opportunity for clients to really go deep within themselves. Also to create an intimate container with me of, okay, how do we build trust together? Yeah. And when we talk about safe spaces, I actually am not crazy about the term safe space, specifically in sexual and erotic realms. We're really stepping into unknown territory.
Sure.
And it's really brave. It's a brave space. And we are, what I invite clients to do is sort of like, titrate their trust in me and in the workshops and in retreats that I work. Titrate your trust. Don't give it all away. You know, when we say this is a safe space, a lot of times people kind of go, safe, I can just do all these things here. And,
right.
And then sometimes there is a closure or a refractory of like, oh, I gave too much.
Yep.
And I didn't listen. I wasn't listening. And so my invitation is actually, as I'm sharing agreements, we have agreements that come into, there's a constant checking in of what's available in their body. You know, is there any part of your body you don't want touch today? Is there any part that is specifically calling for touch? You know, every session includes that. Excuse me. But the beginning, the first day, is really about setting the intentions, the agreements for the container. And also allowing them, like, do you have any agreements you'd like to add to this that feel important to you? But really, again, going back to the titrated process of, since we have time, right? We're talking about spaciousness and time of, can you allow yourself to kind of like take a step forward into an area that feels scratchy for you?
Mm-hmm.
And then lean into like, can I trust this? Can I trust you? Okay, I do feel that I can. I'm going to step forward a little more. Right. And continuing on with that. And I'm also doing the same thing. Right. I'm also doing the same thing, except it's different because I'm leading and the power dynamic is different. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So did I answer that question?
No, I think so. And I think it's such an important topic because you do hear that word thrown around a lot. This is a safe space. And I'm with you. Like, I know there's also the conversation more so in the somatic realms around, you know, safe enough that you can never guarantee safety. But I love how Betty Martin, I'm a big fan of her work and have done a lot of training with the Wheel of Consent, which I'm sure you're very familiar with also. Yeah. And I think, you know, she speaks to safety in a way that really resonated with me. And one of the things is about that safety. I think we go into these spaces thinking safety means I'm never going to feel uncomfortable. I'm safe, so I'm never going to have to encounter something, a negative experience or an uncomfortable experience. And that's really not what safety really is. Safety is knowing that I can have maybe an uncomfortable experience, but I'm going to be able to be seen through it. I'm going to learn how to see myself through it, but also in the therapeutic setting or even in a group setting, that there's going to be support there where I'm not like just left in that experience alone, so to speak. Like, we're going to be seen through it and be equipped and resourced with ways to move through that discomfort and or to create a repair if there's some kind of an injury that happened. So speak to that. Like, do you agree with that whole concept?
Yeah, and I think there's two big words that you talked about there, which are discomfort and repair, that are really big parts of my work. Of, you know, I actually invite people to feel discomfort. Of like, if you feel uncomfortable from a place of, we call it a yellow place, of like, this feels scratchy, and also I still want to move forward. Right. Let's stay there, because that's where the learning is. That's where learning and growth and actually a lot of our eroticism lives.
Yeah.
And then repair. Repair is so important, of understanding that, you know, you might be triggered. You might, you know, something might happen. Somebody might say something or do something that just like kind of throws you off. And instead of like holding it or, you know, blowing things up and walking out the door, can you actually aim for repair? Instead of canceling, right? And that's, you know, trickier for our culture right now, because we are really good at canceling.
Yes.
And it's so much easier to cancel somebody than to go into conversations of repair.
Absolutely.
And repair does require everyone coming to the table with kind of open eyes, ears, and hearts. And sometimes that's not available.
Yeah.
But yes, I agree with that.
Awesome. So let's see. Oh gosh, there's just so many directions.
Can I say something? Just, I want to go back.
Yeah.
To speak about spaciousness with bodies. I'll speak about men first, or penis owners rather. Sure. Is that there is this notion that penis owners or men should just walk into a space and just be ready, you know, hard and ready, that's the requirement.
Right.
Right. And what I've learned with female bodies is that it takes time for women to open.
Yeah.
And sometimes 30 minutes to an hour before there's like really readiness for penetration. And it also takes men, not every man, but it takes a lot of men time to allow their arousal to build too, naturally. And arousal, again, doesn't always align with our hardness. And with women, arousal doesn't always align with wetness.
Yeah.
Right? Sometimes you can be really like, I'm just so into this, and like, My dick is just like, no.
Yeah, right.
And I'm like, what's going on? You know, but it's okay to say to your partner, like, I'm really loving this. Something's awry today. And just kind of like let it go. I'm feeling tired, or, you know, I'm feeling in my soft body today. Can I pleasure you? Or let's experiment with you, you know, loving my softness.
Yes, I love this, because there is such a attachment to, it's particularly in, well, you know, I don't know, maybe in same-sex relationships as well, but in general, there's this idea, that penis owners just have to have an instant hard-on and stay that way, like throughout the sexual encounter, when in reality, there's two, like, you've either got a hard-on or you don't, and that's just part of the play, and there's so many ways to incorporate the lack of an erection and not have to end the whole occasion. Just because there's not an erection.
Yeah, and that kind of speaks to, you know, what I call erotic endurance over stamina. You know, stamina requires you to just be on the whole time. And endurance is this sort of like, we're in this. How long? We don't know. But you're not going to be able to sprint the whole time in a long distance race. You know, it's about, you know, allowing peaks and valleys to come in and rest and, you know, coming back with intensity. And, you know, this is what I find really makes extraordinary sex.
I agree. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. No, of like...
So go ahead and finish the thought.
Allowing space and time for these peaks and valleys to come and go. And also for arousal to build organically and slowly. Right? It, again, it requires spaciousness. And for those couples, for all of the couples I've ever worked with that say, we want more spontaneous sex, I say, let that go right now. Why don't you set a time block to allow for spontaneous sex to happen? Because if you don't, you're going to be sitting in bed every night at 9 p.m. going, are you in the mood? No, I'm tired. Right. And just going to repeat over and over again because everybody's got full lives. You know, we're taking care of kids and family and work and all the things. And so it's kind of like we need to put time aside. You know, even talking to people of like, you know, what was it like when you were younger? Well, when I was younger, I would just go out and meet people and we would go back to my place and have sex. And I was like, yeah, but you did plan.
Yeah.
You did plan on going out. You made time for yourself to go out with the intention of maybe you'd meet someone. So, you know, as much as there's spontaneity in the final action, you planned for something.
Yeah.
You know, it just doesn't happen on its own. So.
Yeah. I love that. I love the plan for spontaneity. I mean, allowing spaciousness for spontaneity is, that's a great concept. And I hope everybody listening will try that out if you're wanting more of that. I mean, the other thing you just spoke to is this idea of the sort of the ebb and the flow. And I think we tend to think, or what I see with a lot of the couples that I work with, there's sort of this idea that once sexual activity begins, that it just has to be like, let's just take penetration, for example. Like there just has to be constant motion, constant movement, constant penetration up until, you know, a climax is reached and then like the occasion is sort of over. Versus what I have really found is that if we take breaks, there's and you actually stop, like literally just like pause, breathe, disconnect physically. If penetration was happening, take a break from penetration, relax, eye gaze, that actually builds the arousal. The sexual charge actually gets hotter so that when you sort of start to re-intensify or perhaps come back into penetration, if that's part of your sexual repertoire, that it can be even the orgasmic experiences that are available from that actually are like turned way up several notches. And it's just a concept I don't think a lot of people take into consideration, this idea that you can actually just like take a total break from being, stay erotically connected, but just totally change what, you know, what's happening on the terrain or the landscape in that particular moment, which doesn't have to be constant motion.
Yeah. You know, there's something in somatic sex education called savoring, called savoring, which is sort of like, you know, at the end of an experience or end of your practice of like not getting up and going to the bathroom and showering or wiping off, but just kind of like almost like shavasana in yoga of like, this is my reverence period. And can we just stay a little bit longer with one another, a little bit longer with yourself to like feel all the rich hormones that are built in our body, to feel all the sensations that are present in stillness. It's so rich. I really, really, really invite people to stay with that. You know, oftentimes I have people share with me that they feel empty after a sexual experience. And we kind of look at why, and a lot of times they are cutting that part off. And, you know, a lot has happened in the body when we are in kind of heightened arousal. There's a lot of hormones. It's our internal pharmacy really working to our benefit. But it would be sort of like doing a mushroom journey. And then when you're in like the thick of it, the practitioner going, okay, we're done. Go to the bathroom. We're actually cutting this experience short. And you're kind of like, what the F? What the F? Why'd you do that? You know, we're kind of doing that with each other. We're not allowing the full arc of an experience to actually come up together and then come down. We are cutting it off at the knees and then just going back to our daily lives. And it's sort of like we haven't allowed all of those hormones to kind of circulate through our body and kind of come down in a progressive nature with one another, which, I mean, that's really one of my favorite moments with a partner.
Well, can you speak to this piece of, you know, the savoring experience that, and how that is or could be a way of using pleasure, so to speak, or that reflecting on pleasures, allowing that experience to sink in, like how can that be a tool for rewiring our nervous system to be able to rewire for more pleasure and more connection?
Yeah. You know, some people go to shame following orgasm, you know, and again, it becomes an opportunity to sit with something uncomfortable, right? So if that's you, if you're in this heightened state of arousal, and then you ejaculate or you come, and then it's sort of like you're left with all the thoughts, the incoming thoughts. And if that's the case, you know, can you go back to feeling into the sensations in your body? Can you invite kind of new thoughts to come in of, you know, wow, that was a beautiful experience, or even saying out loud to your partner, right? Having a moment of kind of reflection of like, what I loved about this experience. When you did this, when you said that, I just, oh my God, babe, that was so good. What did you love? And this is not the time for critique either. You know, the time to make corrections is not in this space. No, really, this is such a vulnerable space of, it's a time for praise. What I loved, the sound you made, the touch, the way you felt, right? And then asking for reflection back. What did you love about it? Oh, tell me. Yeah. You know, it's like allowing the experience to move through even more. So using that as a tool to stay present in the pleasure. Also, if staying still for you is causing you to go into those thoughts again, try moving. You know, get off your back. Get on your knees. See if it's energy that you can move through your body. And again, this feels so strange to people.
Yeah.
It feels so foreign because we're told to be quiet and sit still.
Right,
and all the things. And so actually activating our body in movement and sound, it can feel kind of like, oh my God, I'm that weird kid.
Yeah.
And to which I say, great, I love weird kids.
Yeah.
I'm a weird kid too. Let's be weird together,
yeah.
Right? Like inviting weirdness and strangeness. The body is so magnificent and also so weird.
Love it. Let's be weird. Keeping it weird.
Let's be weird. Keeping it weird.
Yeah. Well, so you work with couples. Who else do you love to work with primarily in your work? Or who do you primarily work with in your work?
Yeah, I've been really lucky. I've gotten to work with every kind of body orientation, sexuality, gender expression. You know, the main kind of audiences or clientele that I work with are cis straight women, cis straight couples, although sometimes the couples are very fluid in their gender expression, sometimes their sexuality, they're looking to open things. And I also work with GBTQ community, so gay, bisexual, trans, and queer men. The only kind of audience I really don't work with too much is straight men. On my own, unless they're kind of like curious or interested. I have worked with some straight men where they're just wanting to learn how to be better with women. And so I do like online coaching with that. But other than that, like those are my two main focuses. And then every once in a while I get kind of a client here and a client there in different areas.
Yeah, I love it. And I love, I think there's such value. Well, there's value in this work really to anybody who feels called to it. But I know personally, a few years ago went through a pretty rough patch and I sought out the services of a male sexological body worker. And I just want to, I'm saying this for the women who are listening, who might be curious about this, but perhaps a little intimidated. It was one of the most healing experiences that I really could have ever asked for. It was a really beautiful way to get some of the needs that I had met in a really safe environment that didn't require me to have to be in a romantic relationship with a partner in order to have like sexual and nurturing touch happen to my body. And I had so much appreciation and reverence for the men that are called, or I don't know if you identify as male.
I do.
Making an assumption there, but okay.
Okay.
Yeah, for the men or the penis owners who feel called to this work, I think it can be, it's such a gift to the world, but I think that there's really a lot out there as well for women. And it seems to me like I feel like there's more obstacles for female body bodied people in accessing and approaching and seeking out this type of work, and particularly with a male practitioner. And I'm just curious if maybe you could speak to that a little bit. I mean, I'm just a big advocate for it, but I'm wondering from your experience, can you speak to that a little bit? And how is it beneficial, and what do you offer cisgender women in particular?
Yeah, I mean, I work privately with women, and I also work for a company called Back to the Body, which offers sensual retreats for women. And, you know, that company offers, I think, 10 to 12 retreats a year. It's really an incredible experience, 7 days of five private bodywork sessions plus group activities and things like that. But I think, you know, why it's safer for women to come into that, because it is female-led, right? Yeah. It's led by a woman. For women coming to work with me privately, I can imagine just the hypervigilance attached to stepping into a space with me, never having met me before, you know, having a level of excitement, but also like, can I trust this person? And I think that's actually smart, right? It's a smart feeling to have, and doing your due diligence, you know, calling references, you know, checking online to listen to, I mean, I have so many things online where people can listen and talk or to hear me speak about my work. You know, really getting to a place where you, again, feel safe enough, brave enough to step into a space with somebody. You know, also doing an exploratory call with a practitioner beforehand of like, what's my gut sense? You know, the thing that I love about women and I've learned from women and female bodies is that women's intuition is usually always right. Mm. It is 99.9% right. And what I also know is they gaslight themselves because of all the shit that they've been taught. And at the end of the day, it's like they were right. Yeah. You know, and even if you weren't right about a thing like this, if it keeps you out of harm's way, it keeps you out of harm's way. And so, like, follow that gut. And it's also like we teach each other to follow our gut in a way that says, if something feels off, don't do it. Mm. But the piece that we often don't teach is if follow your gut. If it feels right, if it feels in alignment, go for it. Like, we go to the negative a lot.
Yeah.
But we don't talk about the following your gut from a positive experience.
That's true. Yeah. And that's sort of how we're maybe wired, evolutionarily speaking. So we really have to do maybe a little extra paying attention to the more positive side.
A lot of attention.
Yeah. Well, Court, it's been awesome having you as my guest today here on Sex Talk Cafe. And I want to give you an opportunity to let our listeners know, how can they find you? How can they connect with you? Do you have any offers or events or anything that you would like to offer to my community? Please do so.
Yes. So you can find me at The Body Vox. That's the B-O-D-Y, V as in Veronica, O-X.com. All of my offerings are there. I have a retreat for LGBTQ men coming up in Joshua Tree called Sacred. And then another one in October for LGBTQ men. There's an event with Back to the Body at the end of this month in March in Joshua Tree, and a lot for the rest of the year as well. So for women, there's tons of events. And then if you're interested in working with me privately, you know, book an exploratory call. And if you say that you've heard me here on Sex Talk Cafe, we'll do it for free.
Awesome. Thank you for that. Well, excellent. Thank you so much for this conversation and for being my guest today on the Sex Talk Cafe.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining me for the Sex Talk Cafe. Please be sure to leave a 5-star review, subscribe, and share this podcast with your friends. And if you're ready to discover the 3 secrets to deepening connection, enhancing pleasure, and expanding your orgasmic potential, then be sure to grab your copy of the Pleasure Keys ebook at pleasurekeys.com. To learn more about my private coaching, couples retreats, and other offerings, be sure to connect with me at pathwaytopleasure.com or find me on social media at Susan Morgan Taylor. Thank you again so much for joining me today for the Sex Talk Cafe.